We spent a lot of time on this show talking about how to optimize things.
Right, like how to learn faster.
Yeah, or how to hack your productivity to get from point A to point B in the straightest line possible. But I have a document in front of me today that suggests we might be looking at the world and specifically how we learn about the world completely upside down.
It is a pretty radical shift in perspective,
Yeah.
especially considering the source material is on the surface incredibly technical. I mean, we aren't looking at a self-help book here.
No, not even close. We are actually looking at the preface and acknowledgments section of a text on crystallography.
Right, by HKDH Padeshia from Cambridge University.
And before you check out, because you don't care about the atomic structure of minerals or shiny rocks.
Which, to be fair, is a completely reasonable reaction for most people.
Exactly, but stick with us. Because this deep dive isn't really about crystals. I mean, but it is actually a manifesto on how to manage the massive explosion of human knowledge without your brain melting.
Yeah, it is really about the tension between strict rules and the chaotic reality of nature. And it starts with this philosophical question that feels like it belongs in a late-night dorm room debate, not a science lab.
It really does. The author basically asks if disorder actually exists, or is what we call disorder just a really complex form of order that we just haven't figured out how to map yet?
That is such a great hook. Padeshia writes that to state the obvious crystals contain order. That is the literal definition, right? Repeating patterns of atoms.
Right.
But then he immediately pivots. He says even when that is disturbed locally, the perturbations themselves may sometimes form regular patterns.
This is where we really have to challenge our binary thinking, because usually we think of order and chaos as total opposites. Like if I knock over a stack of books on my desk, that is chaos.
Sure.
But Padeshia is arguing that in the physical world, specifically in material science, the disturbance itself creates a new kind of pattern.
He gives a really specific example of this called interfaces. I think we should unpack this because it provides such a great visual.
I would love to. So imagine two crystals growing right next to each other. They have their own internal perfect patterns, but eventually they grow until they touch. They basically crash into each other.
And that boundary where they meet is the interface.
Right. Now, if you look at that boundary, it might look like a total car wreck. It looks completely random. Hadeshi actually calls it an apparently haphazard manner.
But his whole point is that if you zoom in, if you look closely at the atomic level, even that wreckage follows specific rules.
The atoms adjust to minimize energy.
Exactly. They settle into a new structure. It is not true chaos. It is just a different, more complex type of order that arose from the conflict.
So it is like looking at a really messy desk and realizing the mess is actually organized by how frequently you use the items rather than by size or color. It looks messy to an outsider, but there is a strict logic to it.
Precisely. And he takes this concept of hidden order even further with something called crystalline solid solutions. This is where things get really trippy.
Yeah, I circled that section. The solid solution mystery. It sounds like a paradox to me. How can something be a solution which implies a mix and crystalline which implies strict order?
So in a perfect crystal, you have what is called long-range order. Imagine a massive auditorium where every single seat is filled by a person wearing a red shirt. That is your crystal. Perfect repetition.
Okay, got it. Red shirts as far as the eye can see.
Now imagine a solid solution. In this case, you randomly swap out half of those people for people wearing blue shirts.
Okay.
There's no pattern to the colors at all. It is totally random. Red, blue, 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 red, blue.
So the strict order is just
The
gone.
chemical order is gone, yes. If you're looking for a pattern of colors, you simply will not find one. But, and this is the key, everyone is still sitting in their assigned seats. The structure of the auditorium hasn't changed one bit.
Oh, I see. So the specific atoms are randomized, but the slots they sit in are still incredibly rigid.
Exactly. And Badeshia points out that if you probe this material with X-rays, it still behaves exactly like a crystal. It still diffracts light in a pattern.
Yeah.
And this leads to one of the most important insights in the text. He writes that disorder can sometimes be ignored without compromising some of the consequences of long-range order.
Disorder can be ignored. That feels like such a loaded statement for a textbook.
It really does. It implies that you don't need perfection to have function. You can have noise in the system, like those random blue shirts, but the overarching structure still works.
The crystal still exists, as a concept, even if the individual components are mixed up.
Right.
That is actually a surprisingly relieving concept. I think we get so hung up on every little detail being perfect, but sometimes the big picture works regardless of the little chaotic bits.
And holding on to that perspective is crucial because of the context in which Badeshi is writing.
Mm.
He isn't just documenting crystals for fun here. He is trying to figure out how to teach this massive, complex subject to students who are completely overwhelmed.
Yes. Which brings us to what I am calling the Buckminster Fuller problem. I absolutely loved that he quoted Buckminster Fuller in a crystallography text. It really sets the stakes for the whole book.
It does. Fuller famously identified the knowledge doubling curve. He pointed out the massive expansion in human knowledge and how it is continuing at an unabating pace.
It is the classic too much information, not enough time problem. Badeshia notes that new subjects are popping up constantly in science, and they all get labeled as essential.
Yeah.
So the modern student at Cambridge, or anywhere really, is facing a much greater palette of distinct courses than students in the past ever had to deal with.
It really is a crisis in education. If you simply add more to the curriculum, you eventually just break the students. You cannot just keep piling on facts forever.
So what is his solution then? Because he admits there are already beacons of scholarship out there in the field. Why write another book if there is already too much to read?
His solution is entirely structural. He partitions the book into two distinct parts. The first part is designed to be completely self-contained.
And get this, it is based on just 9 lectures.
That is right. 9 lectures given to the natural sciences TRIPO students at Cambridge.
I just love the efficiency of that. He says the goal is generic value. He wants to give them just enough material to deliver the concepts without being too detailed.
He is making a very conscious choice to curate. He acknowledges that most books on crystallography are just too detailed for a modern undergraduate schedule. So he strips it back to the absolute essentials.
Crystals, polycrystals, interfaces, and transformations.
Exactly.
It is the shortcut approach, but in the best possible way. It is respecting the learner's time. He is basically saying, I am not going to drown you in every single exception to the rule right now. I am going to give you the mental model you need to understand the world.
Which is incredibly difficult to do as an expert. It is much harder to be concise than it is to be comprehensive. To write that first part, he really had to decide what not to teach. He had to decide which disorder could be ignored.
But he doesn't leave the hardcore researchers hanging right. He knows some people actually need the nitty-gritty details.
Right, and that is exactly where part two comes in.
This is where we leave the generic value behind and go straight into the deep end.
Yes. This section is actually based on a book he published back in 1987 on the geometry of crystals. It offers the depth required for actual research.
Okay.
And this is where things get really interesting regarding the rules. Because apparently, crystallography is full of rules, but the author seems to have a bit of a love-hate relationship with them.
It seems like the classic conflict between nature and convention. We create rules to describe nature, but nature doesn't always care about our rules. He mentions a specific paper by Donnet from 1943.
Yes, the Donnet paper. It proposed a set of strict rules for defining the crystallographic orientation of a crystal. It was this grand attempt to create order to standardize the entire field.
But Padeshi points out that these rules were immediately punctuated by exceptions, special cases, and difficulties.
It is like humanity says, here are the rules, and nature says, hold my beer.
Exactly. Nature is messy. So you end up with a rule, then an exception to the rule, then a special case for the exception, and suddenly learning the subject becomes an exercise in memorizing list after list of caveats.
And it is not just nature breaking the rules, either. Humans seem to make it much harder on themselves, too. He spends some time discussing the conflict of conventions. Specifically, he mentions the Bungee convention for Euler angles.
Okay, let's unpack this, because Euler angle sounds incredibly intimidating to me.
It really does sound complicated, but it is just a way of describing rotation in 3D space. Imagine you were holding a crystal in your hand, and you want to describe its orientation mathematically.
Okay, I am holding it.
You need 3 numbers, 3 angles to do that. Those are the Euler angles.
Simple enough. So what is the big controversy?
The controversy is entirely about your frame of reference. In the Bungee convention, you describe the rotation by rotating the reference frame to match the crystal. Imagine rotating the room you were standing in to match the object you were holding.
Okay, that makes sense.
But there is another convention where you do the exact reverse. You rotate the crystal frame into the sample frame.
So it is like describing a location by saying, turn the map north versus turn your car north.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Mathematically, you can get to the exact same result.
Yeah.
But the numbers look completely different. It is totally arbitrary. It is not physics. It is just a choice a bunch of scientists made decades ago.
Right.
But if you mix them up, like if you use the bungee numbers in a non-bungee calculation, you get total nonsense.
So it is just arbitrary complexity. It is a stumbling block for students that has absolutely nothing to do with the actual science of crystals.
Exactly. And Hodatia seems quite frustrated by this. He says his view is that only a limited number of conventions are actually important. For example, keeping the handedness of cell axes consistent is important. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it is just noise.
But here's the tension I noticed. He wants to teach concepts, but the field demands conventions. He specifically mentions the four-index system for the hexagonal class.
Oh, yeah, the four-index system. This is a classic example of this problem. Usually we use three axes, X, Y, Z, to describe a position.
Yeah.
But for hexagonal crystals, people use four axes.
Bye.
It makes the symmetry easier to see visually.
Mm.
But mathematically, that fourth number is entirely redundant. You just don't need it.
But he says it permeates the literature. So even if he thinks it is unnecessary or clunky, he has to teach it. Because if the students go read a paper from 1990, they are going to see it.
That is the ultimate struggle. He writes, the emphasis of the book is to teach concepts rather than rules which necessarily require rote learning.
Yeah.
But then he admits, and this is very vulnerable for a textbook author to say, I am uncertain as to whether I have done enough to minimize the use of conventions.
That stuck out to me, too. He is the expert. He is writing the definitive book, and he is still asking himself, did I make them memorize too much useless stuff?
It is a question every single educator faces.
Mm.
Are we teaching students how to think, or are we just making them memorize the secret handshake of the profession?
Right.
Padici clearly prefers the former. He wants them to understand the concept of symmetry, not just memorize the convention of the four-index system. But he is honest about the constraints of the real world.
It really highlights the human element behind all this hard science. We tend to think of science texts as these objective stone tablets dropped from the sky.
Me do.
But this preface shows there is a real person behind it, making judgment calls, worrying about his students, and trying to navigate decades of history.
And speaking of the human element, he emphasizes that you cannot just read about this stuff. You have to actually do it.
Crystallography thrives on practice. That is his exact quote.
He included worked examples throughout the entire book for that specific reason. He even points readers to video lectures online.
Yeah, he gives the full URL right there in the text. It is on the Cambridge site. It shows he wants this to be a living, breathing learning process, not just some static text on a page.
And he shares his own origin story, which I found quite touching. He didn't even start out as a crystallographer.
Right. He mentions his interest actually stems from research on solid-state phase transformations, basically how one material turns into another material. But then he immediately pivots to the people who helped him along the way.
The tributes to his mentors. He mentions the wisdom and writings of the late J.W. Christian and C.M. Wayman. These are absolute giants in the field.
But he also brings up his colleagues John Leake and Kevin Knowles, and I love the specific reason he mentions them. He says he tapped into their knowledge whenever he felt confused about the fine detail.
That is such a crucial and refreshing admission. Whenever I felt confused, here's a Cambridge expert, a professor writing a textbook, and he's openly admitting that he gets confused and needs to ask a friend for help.
It totally destroys the myth of the lone genius in a lab.
It really does. It creates a collaborative image of science. It is not just a guy in a tower. It is a network of people helping each other understand the fine details. It validates the confusion. If Hodatia gets confused about the details, it's perfectly okay if we get confused.
But the tribute that really caught my eye wasn't to the famous mentors or the esteemed colleagues. It was to the students.
Yes, incisive questions posed by undergraduates.
That is so cool to me. He is crediting the undergraduates with sharpening his own understanding of a field he has studied for years.
It connects right back to what we were saying about critical thinking and conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Often, it is the person learning the subject for the very first time who asks the most fundamental question, the question that makes the expert stop and say, why do we do it that way?
Right. The expert's so used to the bungee convention or the four-index system that they stop questioning it. They just do it. The student is the one raising their hand going, this makes no sense. Why are we doing this?
Exactly. Those naive questions are often the most penetrating. They force the expert to justify the rules, and sometimes they realize the rules aren't actually justified at all. Hodatia, recognizing that, shows he really values the two-way street of education. He's explicitly grateful for the camaraderie.
Camaraderie. That is a word you just don't often hear in the preface of a hard science textbook. It paints a beautiful picture of a community.
It does. And I think that wraps up the mission of this deep dive perfectly. We started by looking at a text about rocks and atoms, but we actually found a text about community, about the struggle to organize knowledge, and about the beauty of finding order in chaos.
So let's recap the journey here. We started with the microscopic atoms, interfaces, solid solutions. We saw that even when things look haphazard, there are rules. There is order in the disorder.
And crucially, we saw that you can sometimes ignore the disorder, the noise, and still get the full value of the structure. You do not need 100% order to have a functioning system.
Then we zoomed out to the macroscopic challenge. We have a Buckminster Fuller explosion of knowledge. We have students absolutely drowning in courses. And we have an author trying to carve a path of essential learning through that jungle.
By focusing on concepts over rote learning, even though, as he admits, the conventions of the literature, like those pesky Euler angles, make that a constant uphill battle.
And finally, we saw that science is a deeply human endeavor. It is built on the wisdom of mentors, the fresh eyes of students, and the camaraderie of colleagues who help you when you are confused.
It is a great reminder that whether we are looking at a crystal lattice or a university curriculum, we are always just trying to find the pattern, the structure that makes sense of the world.
Which leads me to the big takeaway for you, the listener. Why does this matter if you aren't a material scientist? Why should you care about H.K.D.H. Boadicea's preface?
I think it matters because we are all dealing with the Buckminster Fuller problem. We are all completely flooded with information. In your own work, whatever field it is, you have to decide what is the concept and what is just the convention.
That is the key right there. Are you memorizing the four index system of your job, the busy work, the jargon, the arbitrary rules that someone made up 10 years ago? Or are you understanding the underlying physics of how things actually work?
Focusing on concepts allows you to adapt. Focusing on conventions just makes you really good at following rules that might change tomorrow anyway. If the bungee convention goes out of style, the rote learner is completely lost. The concept learner just adjusts their frame of reference and keeps going.
And remember Fadashi's main point. Disorder can be ignored. You don't need absolute perfection to have a working system. Sometimes a solid solution with random atoms still shines just like a perfect crystal.
That is such a liberating thought. You don't have to know everything. You just have to know what actually matters.
It really is. Now, here is a final thought to leave you with today. Boadicea admitted he was uncertain if he successfully minimized rote learning in his book. He wasn't sure if he won the battle against arbitrary rules.
Which is an incredibly honest place to end a preface.
So I want to ask you, look at your own field, your own studies, or your own workplace. If you stripped away the conventions, the way things have always been done, the arbitrary bungee conventions of your daily life, what would be left? Are you looking for the underlying patterns that remain even when things look haphazard, or are you just memorizing the rule book?
That is the real question. Are you seeing the crystal or just the dust on the surface?
Something to mull over. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
It was a pleasure.